You are listening to the Wells Tech Podcast, where we talk about technology that can serve the church and its work of spreading the gospel. Wells Tech is a part of the Podcast Network on Streams, the internet media site sponsored by the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Join the conversation by visiting our podcast website at wellstech.wells.net. You're listening to the Wells Tech Podcast for Wednesday, October 14th, 2009. This is episode 101. Help! We are waveless. It is time again for the Wells Tech Podcast, and we are at episode 101. Good morning, Sally.
Good morning, Martin, and welcome to a snowy October.
Don't say that.
Oh, yeah, we've had snow two mornings this week in Sleepy Eye.
Official snowfall?
Yes, sir, the real thing.
Really?
Very, very white outside. It melted away by afternoon, but we were pretty covered on Saturday and Monday mornings.
This is about the earliest I can remember that happening.
Yeah, before October 15th. That's hard to believe.
Mm-hmm. Well, we don't have any here. We had a few flurries. I chose to ignore them. And it's sunshiny today, so don't send any of that stuff our way.
I'll try to keep it away from you.
Okay. Well, you survived the 100th episode all right, did you?
Yeah, that was a lot of fun.
It was. I had a good time, too.
We had kind of a chuckle from Ryan Rosenthal, who had won a couple of our previous contests. He had to tweet us and say, you know, well, it's good that, you know, I was really hoping to win, but it's good that Chris won. Chris was my student teacher. So of all things, I got the Wells connection going on there.
There's something in the water.
Yeah. So congratulations to Chris for his big win on our 100th episode.
Chris, all right. So now back to business. We've got some good ministry stuff to talk about, good technology stuff to talk about. And today we wanted to revisit a topic that we explored probably, I would say, almost a year ago, Logos Bible Software. And who better to talk to about Logos Bible Software than the ExaTweet, Pastor Aaron Fry from Tawas City, Michigan. Aaron was on with us the first time we talked about Logos. They've made some changes, and so we had a chance to spend some time with Aaron again to talk about what's new with Logos and how it might be an application or a program that you might be interested in. So let's listen to our conversation with Aaron Fry. Joining us today on the Wells Tech Podcast, again with us, I should say, is Pastor Aaron Fry from Emmanuel in Tawas City, Michigan. Welcome back to the show, Aaron. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you. It's good to be here, Martin.
It was back in, I believe, February of 08. I can't even believe we've been having that many shows. You must have been one of the first. And we felt that of all ministry topics, at least of those of interest, especially to pastors, those that relate to technology, Logos is probably something that a lot of pastors have a lot of interest in right now and some of the advancements there. So we thought it would be great to have you back on. And back then you talked a little bit about what Logos was and its uses, but you've learned a little bit there. You've been to Logos camp, as it were, you've done some customizations as well. So we felt that another conversation would be fitting. So maybe before we jump into that Logos chat, tell us again a little bit about yourself, introduce yourself to the listeners, and where you're serving, what you're doing, and what's going on with Logos.
Sure. I'm serving in Tawas City now, as you mentioned, at Emmanuel Lutheran. And before that, 3 years back, I had been serving Peace Lutheran in Otsego, Michigan. That's Otsego down south, not the one up here that everyone thinks I'm from. Mm-hmm. There's two Otsegos in Michigan on opposite ends of the state.
How do they allow that to happen?
They always say, they would say it didn't really happen because the one up here is Otsego Lake or Otsego County.
Ah, okay, so you get your choice.
Down there it's Otsego City, but nobody knows that up here. Anyway, before that, I was assigned there from the seminary. I had served 1 year as a full-time pastor and emergency call after my vicar year was over, and that was in the Twin Cities.
Okay. Again, wanted to talk a little bit about your usage, first of all, of Logos, and you've been doing some teaching at the SEM for Logos, or on the Logos platform.
Yeah, the seminary's been requiring students there to own a laptop and a copy of Logos since, oh boy, I mean, I get the year right. It's got to be at least 5 years.
Really? Okay, that's awesome.
Yeah. I don't think a lot of people know that.
Mm-hmm.
So you go into a classroom at the seminary, and everyone's got a laptop open and Logos installed. That was all part of just a general push, because it's obvious that in the realm of exegetical research, if you're just studying Greek and Hebrew and other ancient languages, everything's moving out of books, and it's mm-hmm. moving into large databases. And Logos represents a desktop application in that realm,
mm-hmm.
where large databases, where you have lots and lots of resources, lots of raw material, and then the tools to aggregate all the information that you learn from them, basically to do the work of people who in the past had spent years and thousands of man hours, you know, with assistants and you know, lots and lots of filing cabinets trying to figure out how to write a lexicon, you know, Greek English lexicon for the New Testament. The kind of data they needed to do that, we can get at the click of a button now.
Right. And just for our listeners who may not be familiar with it, one of the neat things about this tool is its ability to synchronize across different resources. So if you're looking up a particular word or verse of the Bible, you can have at your disposal commentaries, lexicons, basically anything that's within the Lebronic system at your disposal, and really makes a text study, I would assume, a lot easier than it used to be.
Much easier than it used to be. And I think the real blessing it is for us as a synod is the emphasis at the seminary. You know, now that you have these tools, there's kind of a fear that it becomes a crutch, and then you don't learn the language as well in the first place.
Right.
Well, we don't use the tools at MLC so much,
mm-hmm.
and we still have the same kinds of courses at Martin Luther College. And then when they get to the seminary and they come to Winterham to take a class on Logos, one of the first things I say to them is, don't use this to spend less time in study. Use this to get deeper in the same amount of time.
Right. Optimize that time. Sure.
Yep.
And you
yep.
can use it to annotate and basically be your little personal reference as well, right?
Sure. Yeah. I've got a ridiculous number of files because I've been using this since 1993. And I had a laptop for my last year at the seminary anyway. You know, I'm mm-hmm. kind of old by comparison.
Yeah.
For 1 year at the seminary, I had a laptop, and I took all my notes, my class notes, actually straight into Logos and the annotation files. And so it can be everything that you need for study, although I think any scholar will tell you don't rely on any one tool anyway. But in terms of collecting all your data in one place, yeah, it can do that.
So, Pastor Fry, when we spoke to you back in February of 2008, you were just getting started with a Logos for Lutherans group on the Yahoo website.
Right.
And taking a peek at that group today, we see that it's been pretty busy there in the Logos for Lutheran world. 162 members, 730 posts in the last, year and a half or so. So tell us, you know, how this success story, this Web 2.0 tech and ministry vehicle has been working out for you and the members of the Logos for Lutherans group.
I think it's been really great. Now, I mentioned in our last interview, one of the reasons I started is I kept getting basically Logos tech support phone calls from Welsh pastors.
Right.
I said, well, let's try to put all that information somewhere else. Look it up, you know. But it was a very practical concern for me.
So it wasn't totally altruistic.
Yeah, well, no point in taking credit where credit's
right.
not due. Right,
that's right. But it seems like it's doing the job then, right?
Yeah, it does the job. And, you know, I like it as a forum. For me, a forum that's where people are writing and constantly it's hard to keep up. That's, I don't like those kinds of forums, but when anybody among those 160 people has a question about Lugus and they put it on there, you know, we all come back with a flurry of suggestions and that takes care of it. So you'll see a lot of on again, off again posting, but it serves everyone's need. And I'm really happy in how it's worked out that way. I have considered moving to other platforms. You know, I'd originally chosen Yahoo Groups because I knew I could keep spam bots out.
Mm-hmm.
But you hate to fence in too much. You know, it'd be nice to maybe even have a wiki or something.
Sure.
Possibly even the WellsTech wiki mm-hmm. could have a Lugus area, I suppose, where you've got that information all laid out and people can add what they've learned and other people can benefit from that. But it has been a very, very nice forum. It's benefited a lot of people, and I've really enjoyed it myself.
How does somebody get there and join?
Well, you got to go to Yahoo Groups, and I suppose probably the easiest thing is just plug Yahoo Groups into a Google search or something.
Or a Yahoo search.
Or a Yahoo search, yeah. Right.
So I think it's groups.yahoo.com.
Heaven forbid we should use something other than Google. Huh?
That's right. Heaven forbid, yes. And then they would search on Lugus for Lutherans then?
Lugus for Lutherans, yes.
Okay. And then they submit a request, and then you do you approve those requests? Is it by request only?
Yeah, I don't turn anyone down because they didn't give me a good enough request. That's just to keep out the box.
Okay.
So.
All right. Very good.
All right. And Martin referenced earlier that you've been to Logos Camp as well. So I'm sure our listeners would like to hear about your Logos experience, trip to their headquarters, what kind of things you learned there.
Yeah, a lot of people actually ask me about Camp Lugus because a lot of pastors who want to know more about Lugus, they'll get these emails or see it on the Lugus site. You know, Camp Lugus is coming to town and, you know, you should sign up. And they'll call me up and say, should I sign up for that? And I have a lot of different answers.
Mm-hmm.
depends on what they want and that sort of thing. But this was a Camp Lugus 2, they call it. And the reason that the seminary had sent me out was that Lugus had just introduced a new technology into the realm of exegetical study called syntactical databases. Whereas in the past, most of these large databases were based on looking at a word in Greek or Hebrew and analyzing the form. You know, so like in English, mm-hmm. we don't do a lot of forms, but you know, with pronouns we do. You know, you're supposed to know when to say I and when to say me, right?
Right.
If it's an object of a verb or a preposition, you say me, and otherwise it's I. Well, Greek and Hebrew, like most languages, has lots of forms for all their nouns and all their verbs. And so most of the databases were based on that, analyzing the form. But that doesn't tell you how it's used in the sentence. So, like, you know, if I had me in English, I know that's an object of something. Is mm-hmm. it an object of a preposition? Is it the object of a verb? I don't know which. Those kinds of databases that analyze the form couldn't tell you, but a syntactical database sets things up according to their relationship with other words in the sentence.
Right.
So you can go through, if you're not sure how a particular Greek word is used in the way, in the sentence that it's in, you know, because different words can take on different slants depending on the way that they're used, you can check it according to the words that it's used, that it's in connection with.
Right.
And so that was a new technology, and nobody knew how to use it. And I'll be the first one to say, as a new technology, it has a long way to go toward being exceptionally user-friendly.
Sure.
Yeah,
I can remember some of the earlier versions, and they were pretty ominous. But that kind of technology, its application is important, especially if you're doing a tech study, because it's those little details that really make a difference, or could make a difference, in how you craft a sermon and what really your what kind of word you're bringing to the people.
Yeah, you better believe it. That is an invaluable. When I first saw that they were working on that, I was ecstatic, because there's so many times I'm trying to figure out just what this word means, and I can see from different Bible translations that the translators can't agree.
Right, exactly.
You know,
right.
So you know, I'm saying, well, how does the Bible use that word?
Mm-hmm.
And a syntactical database is much more direct approach to doing that than just analyzing the form. So that was exciting, but it was hard.
Mm-hmm.
So the seminary sent me out to Washington, because they don't do many Camp Lugus 2s. Not many people are working with the software at that level.
Right.
And it was basically, specifically for the syntactical database. And I was actually rather disappointed because
Okay.
it turns out that it's kind of like outside of our synod, not many people study the languages the way we do.
Right.
Yeah.
So
Even
what?
those who use this software. So.
Right. So what's it like at a Camp Logos? Is it kind of like a geek fest of sorts, or are these all eggheads, or
Yeah.
how many people are there, and what kind of setting was it?
I went to one of the basic level Camp Luggis sites when the original Luggis Series X came out, when Labrox was introduced. That was, what, 2001, I think. And so that's probably like a more normal one. And I think you'd expect to see, depending on the venue, you'd probably expect to see 30 people there. Everybody either has a laptop or Morris Proctor, the instructor, will buy you with one. And he steps through the basic functionality. It takes 2 days of just basically seeing what Luggis can do, giving you a little bit of time to play with it yourself and learn how to do it yourself. And if you're interested in just seeing the way Luggis works, that's a way to go. Although I believe we mentioned, or maybe we didn't mention last time, there are also, oh, I know, you guys had mentioned it in the meantime, the training videos.
Right.
Sally, didn't you have that as a pick of the week or something like that?
That's
Or,
right, one of our
yeah, that's
ministry
right.
resources.
Yeah, ministry resources. There you go. The training videos are fantastic. They're really fantastic. A lot of times, when somebody asks a question on Luggis for Lutherans, I'll give a brief answer and a link, because I'll say, what you need to do is this. If you watch this video, you'll learn a lot faster than I could teach you through email. And they're just very well done. So.
So now that you're good friends with all the guys at the Logos headquarters, do you know any insider information about upcoming releases or anything exciting in the future?
Probably the worst time in the history of Luggis to ask that question, because I've never seen them more secretive about a release than they are with Luggis 4. It's back at Camp Luggis, when they were still thinking about what was going to go into it, there were a couple of things they were absolutely sure of, and they weren't being secret about it at all. One is a brand new type of technology for searching that is kind of a hybrid. Now, if you're into Bible software at the exegetical level, the Greek and Hebrew level, there's kind of a debate going on as to whether or not you should be using Luggis or you should be using BibleWorks. And typically it goes, you use Luggis because of the tremendous library.
Right.
Luggis has easily the larger library, far more publishers using it, so it's easier to get the resource you need. And then the BibleWorks person will say, yes, but Luggis is slow. And by comparison, the two kinds of search engines, just objectively speaking, Luggis is slower.
Okay.
Because what Luggis does is somewhat more of a raw search of all your books. There is some indexing involved, but not to the degree like BibleWorks. It's basically every search is hardwired, so it's just bang, there it is.
Right.
But of course, that limits the kind of search you can do now.
Sure.
So, there's trade-offs either way. Well, the Luggis was very excited because they hired some, I don't know who it was, but some tremendous data mining expert who had an idea for a cross between those two technologies. And that new search engine is going to be at the core of Luggis 4, and that's, so it's going to be tremendously fast.
Well, that's got to be really important in these kinds of tools, the ability to connect related information smartly rather than just a brute force, kind of approach. And that's really the power of
Exactly.
the tool. Now, Luggis is basically installed on a local machine still, right? You have disks. And is there hope that it would become more of an online offering? Is there anything like that going around?
Well, to a certain degree, Luggis does offer some of their tools online and
Okay.
for free too.
Okay.
You couldn't get anything like buying the Scholar's Library from Luggis just by going online and trying to use their free tools. But they offer online basic Bible searching, connections to a number of different commentaries, and probably by now, Martin, a good guy to talk to for free online resources is your brother-in-law.
Right. He's a user.
Yeah, he's the expert in that. His conference had asked me down for a Luggis training seminar,
Okay.
a little while back, and I took the luggage side, and he took the everything else side.
Okay. That would be Pastor Dan Witte, for those
that haven't
Pastor
Dan Witte, yes.
Down in Florida, yeah. So.
Yeah, and you had not too long ago on your podcast, you had...
He's got a resource page on his website.
Yeah, his resource page, yeah. Which is really excellent, and a lot of good free stuff. So Lugus knows those things are out there, and they want to supply them to a degree. I use ref.ly tagger for when I'm using Twitter and I want to make a reference to a Bible passage. And, you know, they offer a lot of neat, free online stuff. But I don't know how soon it would be before you start to see libraries online.
Right.
Just because of the technical difficulty and being able to search something that large in a good amount of time without a hard drive.
Right.
I'm sure eventually everyone would love to see a Lugus iPod app. And I know Lugus is already looking into that because they've asked people about it and gotten feedback on it. What exactly it's going to entail, it's hard to say, because Lugus is always very concerned about not just throwing something out there, but putting something out there that's useful and that satisfies the publishers.
Mm-hmm.
And it's their relationship with the publishers that makes their library so extraordinary.
Yeah, absolutely. Without that, they would just be an engine, you know, with the content to serve up. And you know, it was encouraging when we talked with the guys at MPH. All of they've made a commitment, obviously, to Libronix and getting everything online. That's a good thing that our publishing house is interested in feeding the engine.
Yeah, doing a tremendous job so far, and with some incredible plans for the future too.
Yep.
So, Pastor Fry, you mentioned Twitter. You are on Twitter. You're ex-a-tweet on Twitter.
Yeah.
I follow you there. And just as you were talking, I was reminded that I believe you tweeted once fairly recently that you were using Dropbox for some file syncing with your Logos installation.
Yeah.
How's that working out for you?
Very well. I'd like to have all my resources in my Dropbox and available on lots of different kinds of computers, but I haven't yet gotten to the point of paying for Dropbox, so that limits my, you know, my number of gigabytes.
Mm-hmm.
My library, I think, is in the range of 5 to 6 gigabytes
now.
Holy
cow! Wow.
Yeah, all that data, right? Tremendous amount of data.
You must be really smart.
Yeah. Well, you know, my computer is.
It's all in there somewhere. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, it's in there somewhere. But I do use Dropbox for my documents, my Lugus documents, and that was a big deal to me. Being able to move to different computers. I have a Mac, and I haven't become a huge Mac fan, I have to admit, much to the chagrin of many Mac users, because Lugus it has a Mac version,
right.
But it's not up to speed yet.
Right.
So a lot of the functions I use constantly when I'm doing a Bible study, I can't get from Mac. So I always have to run Windows and, you know, either virtualize it or pop up in boot camp and drop the Mac environment entirely.
Right.
When I do that, I can't always see all my files all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So Dropbox helps to close that gap, and I can see all my Libronix files all the time now.
Very good.
Mm-hmm.
You also have some ideas for customizing Libronix. I think maybe something in the works, even possibly.
Well, I think you might be referring to the work of your husband, Sally.
Oh, no. That's old news.
It is old news, but it's still one of the best things that's ever happened to Lugus in its entire history. You know, I showed that code when I was at Camp Lugus. Sitting behind me and to the left was Dale Pritchett, who's the father of the guy who invented Lugus and works there as a VP of, was it marketing or distribution or something? I don't know which. I showed him that code, and he stared at it for a second, and he said, "Does that guy want a job?"
No, he doesn't.
Okay. But the only the big stuff on the horizon for me is something that I can't talk with Lugus about yet. They're too busy with version 4, but they're interested. But I don't know if they're going to ever follow through or not. So I'm trying to program something with my brother that does. Kind of a more universal Bible study note-taking environment where you could start, you know, any point in your career as a pastor, or for that matter, Don't have to be a pastor to use it. You know, mm-hmm. just anyone who studies the Bible a lot and has a lot of thoughts and wants to write them down and be able to reference them later. We're working on a database system that allows you to find your stuff that you took notes on, either by the passage you were looking at or by the theological concept it's under, like, you know, the Trinity or the incarnation of the Christ or, mm-hmm. you know, whatever you were thinking of at the time and you took a note on it based on a passage you were studying. You would take your notes in such a way that they were, I guess in a Web 2.0 world, you'd say they're tagged in multiple ways mm-hmm. that the database takes care of on its own and makes it easier to find your thoughts later. I presented that to Lugus and they said, you know, that sounds really good, but until 4 comes out, we're not looking at anything new.
Okay. so, one thing at a time.
Be perfect for it, yeah. So, yeah. Just because of their ability to find Bible references.
Cool. Before we close, Aaron, obviously the guys that have come out from the SEM the last few years have this already in their tool belt, but I would assume maybe a growing segment of Lugus users would be guys in their, been out for a number of years and weren't part of the Lugus launch or revolution or whatever it is. What kind of investment and what kinds of maybe starter pieces of modules would be, in your opinion, necessary for somebody to get their toes wet with us if somebody's wanting to say, hey, I should get on this electronic bandwagon?
Yeah, I've seen a lot of people start in a lot of different ways, like I said, because all the phone calls I've gotten over
right.
the years. And with the current libraries, I would have to suggest to a pastor who wants it for regular study, stay clear of the original languages library if you can. Huh. The name is intriguing,
yeah,
but it lacks some real good basic resources that I guarantee you if you had them, you would use them regularly. Now, granted, if you just can't afford going past the original languages library, you're better off having that than nothing. But I would suggest at minimum the Scholars Library, and even better, I would suggest Silver.
Okay.
And that's going to be, oh, wow, I haven't looked at the price for a while. I remember the Scholars Library was just over $600.
And these are essentially bundles of different modules and resources, right, that
right.
they've put together that make sense for the user type, yeah.
Yeah, it's, you know, for the most part, you think of it as a library. You know, how many
right.
books am I going to get?
Sure.
And a lot of us look at those libraries and we say, well, there's a ton of books in there I'm never going to use. And I always say to people, yeah, but just ignore those.
Mm-hmm.
Because getting those in your bundle makes the ones you want a lot cheaper.
Right,
so,
right, right.
It doesn't make a lot of sense, but those are the deals they make with the publishers. So so look at the ones that you really want and the ones that would be most beneficial to your study and, mm-hmm. you know, just do your basic cost and benefit analysis and see what you get. I think most guys, though, if they understood the resources they were getting, would come out with either Scholars or Scholars Silver mm-hmm. and on occasion, I suppose, even Gold.
Okay. Very good. We'd be remiss before we close if we didn't let our listeners know that, Aaron, you are talking to us via Skype on your new iPod Touch, right?
Yeah. As I said, Sally picked up on it, the PDA market is dead. And you either got to get a smartphone or you got to get an iPod. And,
yep.
I don't have a smartphone, so I actually got an iPod.
Yeah. Sounds great.
In terms of a replacement for a Palm, still has a way to go. Not
really?
Quite as convenient, yeah.
You just haven't found the right apps
That's
yet.
Right. There's an
I'm
app
trying.
For everything.
I told you I got Calendoo, and that was working well for my Google Calendar. But, you know, I'm so used to being able to press a button and see my calendar. But now I
got
to press the menu.
Well, you only got one button, so you can blame
yeah,
Steve Jobs for that.
But it's been very excellent. It's an excellent machine, and I've really enjoyed using it, and it's done a lot for me.
And
of course, then there's the problem with the games. But
yeah, that's right.
That does a lot for you, too.
Yeah.
That keeps
yeah.
you sharp.
Stretch the mind, yeah. And you're talking to us for free, so... Thanks,
That's
Aaron.
Right.
Thanks, Aaron, for joining us. Really appreciate you coming back on. And anybody interested in learning a little bit more, I think the Logos for Lutherans Yahoo group is probably a great place to go.
I think so, too.
All right. Thanks, Aaron. Blessings on your work.
And yours as well.
Sally Aaron is a good time. Good interview.
Yeah, that was just loaded with lots of good stuff. It's going to take me a while, Aaron, to type up the notes from that conversation, but we'll have a lot of great links that Aaron mentioned throughout his time with us included in our show notes at wellstech.wells.net.
Mm-hmm. It's a nice segue into our ministry resources section, because he brought up a couple of things there that might be of use in for ministry purposes that I was not aware of. First of all, the website bible.logos.com is basically a new beta site that is the Bible online.
Yeah, a lot like BibleGateway.com, mm-hmm. but Logos's version of that, and it has some nice features, one of which that I was really impressed with is actually a feature at refly.com, mm-hmm. ref.ly, where you can come up with a short URL to any Bible reference. And so you just type out the Bible reference you want, and you get a tweetable URL that you can include anywhere and save those precious characters as you're writing online.
Mm-hmm. Another thing that I like there that is one of their other products is called Ref Tagger, and that is a little plugin that you put on your website, and it will turn any Bible reference that you have typed in there on a blog post or on your website and give it kind of a pop-up rollover effect where you can actually read the Bible verse. Rather than just looking at the reference, somebody coming to your site can read the entire verse in a little bubble window that pops up right over the top. They say it works on Blogger, on WordPress, a bunch of forum sites, through a couple of content management systems, including Drupal, which is the Synod's new hosting platform or content management platform, Joomla we've talked about, and MediaWiki. So that might be worth looking at as well, just to give that little something extra to your website and get the Word of God right in front of people, rather than making them look it up or click on a link to Bible Gateway or something like that. So,
yep, I can see your wheels turning from here, Martin. That new Wells website yep. might need a plug-in like that.
We're using something. I'm not sure if it's RefTagger or not. I'll have to check. But if not, this is pretty cool.
Cool.
You can, I think you can pick the version that you're using, and nicely done. So.
One more note from Aaron's interview. I got a kick out of the fact that we talked a little bit about the iPhone iTouch technology and whether Logos was moving into that space. And right after we recorded the interview, one of their vice presidents, their marketing vice president, put out a tweet with a picture of mobile Logos on an iPhone. So I think that the days are short when we will be having a nice iPhone application for Logos as well.
Cool. Very good. Yeah. Take it wherever you go, or wherever your iPhone or iPod Touch, I would assume, goes as well. So,
yeah,
good stuff. So, what's the news in the tech industry, Sally? Are you riding the Google wave?
I'm not yet, but I sure am hoping to soon. Yeah, Google announced at the end of September that they were starting to send out official invitations to normal people. I think developers have had access to Google Wave for a while, but us normal folks are getting a chance now. And over the last few weeks, I've been, you know, reading little tweets here and there. Everybody's looking for their Google Wave invite in their email inbox, and few people are receiving them. Just in the last 12 hours, I've seen two of our Wells Tech friends tweet that they've received their Google
really?
Wave invite.
Oh, really? Well, send us some invites.
Yeah, we'd love to play with it.
I was one of the early ones to request one, and I have not seen the light of day. So if you've got an invite to spare, I would love to be able to get one, and Sally would too. Show us some love.
Got a few neat resources as people are beginning to use it. There's more and more information being shared about what you can do with it, explaining what it's capable of. Martin, you had posted a pretty cool video. Mm-hmm. With
I found
Google
a
Wave.
Cool video that I referenced, Jess.
Yes, you didn't make the video.
Since I don't have Wave,
have
that's right.
Yeah. And I found a life hacker post from Gina Trapani, who's a good writer, good explainer of technology. So if you want to, you know, read more about Google Wave and try to wrap your brain around it a little bit, check out Google Wave 101 from Life Hacker, and we'll have links for all that in the show notes.
Very good. Shall we move on to our picks of the week?
Oh, I can hardly wait.
For the second century of the podcast.
Second century. Here we go. My pick of the week is an iPhone iPod Touch app, but it has a web application companion as well. Mm-hmm. We've talked about in the past Dropbox. It's actually at the URL getdropbox.com. And what it is on the web is the fact that you can have up to 2 gig of storage for free where you can share files. So you can put files in your Dropbox on your local computer. They automatically sync to the website, and then they sync to anywhere else that you install Dropbox. So for me, I work a lot at our Lutheran Elementary School, have a computer over there, so I install Dropbox there, and I can easily sync up files between my home computer and my school computer. So that's a great feature, and we've talked about that quite a bit in the past. What's different now is that they just released, within the last week or so, an iPhone iPod Touch application for Dropbox. And so now you can not only sync to your computers via this website, but you can also sync to your iPhone. Mm-hmm. And boy, did that open up a whole world of possibilities for me. No more syncing through iTunes to get photos and things on my iPhone. I can actually do it through Dropbox, and it plays all different file formats. It allows me to see documents. When I put photos there, I can see them in a photo gallery kind of view on my iPod Touch, and just a lot of power there. And it was neat. I tweeted about it right when it happened, and I got some feedback right away from some of our listeners. I heard from Michael Johnson, who's at the seminary in his senior year this year, and he said he just downloaded it, and he was real excited about it. He had been using Dropbox for his seminary section to share files, so they don't have to bog down the network there. And so they're already making use of Dropbox, and then having the extra iPod Touch application is really powerful for them. And then we also heard from Perry Lund, who's out in Oskaloosa, Iowa, at Grace Lutheran Church, and he said it's sort of a mobile me freebie at 2 gigs of space. Now, I'm not a mobile me user, Martin. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you
are. I am, yes.
But kind of a similar concept. Keep finding ways to increase the value of that kind of content getting to your iPod Touch or iPhone. So check it out.
So you've got an iTunes workaround.
Yeah, basically through the air, you know, push kind of technology. Sure. That as long as I'm on the wireless, which I am pretty much here throughout our church and parsonage, so very powerful tool.
Cool. Did I ever tell you my mobile me horror story?
No.
I've been with mobile me since I bought my first iMac, my only iMac. This was probably 3 years ago now, and I bought that, it came along with, and then when they did this big upgrade and changed its name from whatever it was, iDisk, to mobile me, I had all kinds of issues. Unfortunately, I wasn't using it for a lot of important stuff, but I could not get any of the online stuff to work. Couldn't sync up. I'd add a contact, and it would disappear. I'd add 10 contacts. They'd all disappear. It was just an absolute nightmare. I went back and forth with Apple, probably 10 different, you know, support tickets and requests, and sent them stuff. And what eventually happened is they finally fixed it, but at the other end of it, they gave me essentially 2 free years of mobile me. So I can't complain too much, although I don't use it a lot, but I got 25, I think it's 25 gigs of storage, something like that.
Wow.
And it works pretty well at this point, I'd have to admit. But so because of my plight, they took pity on me, and now I think I've got mobile me whether I want it or not till the end of 2011, something like that. So
what a deal.
Yep.
Well, I'm just thinking that you know, one of David Allen, our Getting Things Done guru, mantras is having a trusted system.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can't trust that system, you can't be real productive. So that's an important piece of the puzzle.
Yeah. Speaking of trusted systems, there's a lot of bad news about cloud computing in the news lately, where the mobile, I think it's who's the carrier now for the Sidekick? It is, I can think of it, it's the one that, T-Mobile.
T-Mobile.
I think T-Mobile had a Sidekick. They essentially, and they had some kind of partnership with Microsoft, where they lost millions of people's address books and phone data, you know, from their phones, and they can't get it back because they didn't back up for some odd reason.
Wow.
They did a SAN upgrade, and they came out the other end of that, and something went horribly wrong, and they had discovered that they had no backup. So that's that's pretty scary. That we are trusting a lot of our lives to the cloud now, and if that's the only place it is, yeah, that's maybe not a good thing. So,
nice plug for backing up your own stuff.
That's right, for sure. My pick has nothing to do with that. It has more. I've been focusing a lot on security lately, personal security, and we care a lot about security here in the Synod office because we deal with a lot of sensitive data, donor information and call worker information, and so security numbers and the whole bit. So we try and lock down things as tight as we can, and the good news about the upcoming release of Windows 7, which is, I believe, on October 22nd, is that it comes, at least the higher-level versions, the Ultimate and the Enterprise versions of Windows 7, come with a little tool called BitLocker. BitLocker, and we'll put a link for that to that a website for that in the show notes. But I blogged about it, I think it was last week, as one great reason to buy or to upgrade to Windows 7 is this BitLocker program, which is essentially an encryption program. It looks at your entire hard drive, encrypts the entire thing, gives it a password, so that if your laptop were to fall into the wrong hands or were compromised in some way, all that data would be safe. Unless they knew your BitLocker password. And so essentially it scrambles all the bits and bytes, you know, on your computer, and makes it safe. So especially with laptops, that they can, it's a surprising number of laptops that walk away in different scenarios, especially in airports. So if you are a laptop user, this would be a must. This encryption program. Another adjunct program is BitLocker to Go, where you can actually encrypt thumb drives or external hard drives. Those can easily be stolen as well. And if you've got sensitive data on there, and you may think, well, I don't have that much information that I'd want to fall into the wrong hands, just think about what you do online, all your passwords. If you do any online banking, if you do any online buying, there is information or could be information on your computer, tax returns and so on and so forth, that you would probably want to secure in some fashion. And these tools are very easy to do. They work once you've got them set up. You never have to worry about them. They just kind of sit there and work. So that's a Microsoft product, comes with Windows 7. Actually, it does come with Vista. For those of you that are using Vista, you have that option with the right versions. But I think they've even made it better in Windows 7. So that is my pick of the week.
So that comes free with those higher level Windows 7. Is it? Can you buy it at a lower level?
I don't believe you can.
Okay, so
there are
some
open source tools. TrueCrypt, I believe, is one, but I don't think they're as good or as transparent. They're kind of a pain in to do some of the same features that Windows takes care of nicely. So if you're thinking about buying Windows 7, I would really look at the Ultimate or Enterprise version. If you're doing it for your church office or school office, that would probably be a good reason to think about the higher level version.
Very good. Great advice. Thank you.
All right. On to community feedback, and we didn't do any community feedback last week, and we're going to pay for it this week, Sally, because we got a ton.
That's right. We're loaded. Lots of great conversations going on out there. We'll start with an exciting email that we received from Pastor Rob Gunther. He's at Gethsemane in Raleigh, North Carolina, and he sent us a link to his Google site. He's actually using Google Sites for their church management software, basically, and he has a really cool page on there about how you can do the same thing. He took the time to document what he was doing with his Google site, and so others can learn from it. So kind of ties back to one of our recent episodes where we talked about Google Sites. They actually went as far as installing the Google apps and have their own domain name connected with it, and I think a really impressive use of it. So you'll want to check out Gethsemane.info to see their website. And thanks very much for sharing your great resources.
Yeah, he really took the time to share, and that's kind of important in our business, Sally, to not just do something but be willing to share that with the class, as it were, so that we can all learn. And he did a great job at that.
Absolutely. All right, next up, just a little feedback on our Google Books episode. Episode 99, we talked about Google Books, and we heard from Mark Ashenkel, and maybe you can do a better job
with that.
Thanks for writing to us, Mark. He actually wrote on my Facebook page, I think, and he said Google Books is a nice feature, and he reads ebooks a lot. However, he finds most of his books at the Gutenberg Project. So that's another great electronic book resource for those that are out of copyright, I believe. Mm-hmm. And you might want to check out that website as well.
Very good.
We heard from our friend John Shoesmith. He was on our 100th episode, and he sent us a great comment regarding copyright. Just kind of a heads up that International Bible Society has changed their name or been bought or something's changed about it, and now Biblica is the name of the company that owns the copyright to the New International Version of the Bible. And so we updated our Wells Tech Wiki page with their new copyright terms of service, which actually they weren't really different, just the company name changed from International Bible Society to Biblical. So got some updates for our Wells Tech Wiki, and we appreciate John alerting us to that.
Very good. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Next, we heard from Perry Lund. I mentioned him a few minutes ago, and here he is again. And he had a really exciting idea for us, and I'm really thrilled that he sent us this, you know, sent it our direction. What he was looking for was a public Google Calendar with the Christian Worship Lectionary Series, and so that he could embed that on his church website. And we started doing a little digging, and we definitely had those resources at our hands, but they hadn't been put together in that way. Our worship office publishes each year an iCal version of the lectionary, so you could embed it in your own Outlook calendar or whatever. But what we did was we took those iCal files and created a public Google Calendar with that lectionary, and this has got through November of 2010 in it. And so we actually created a page on the Wells Tech Wiki, kind of walks you through how you can use it, how you can link to it, how you can embed it in your own Google Calendar, or even embed it in your own website. So thanks, Perry, for that great idea. And check out our brand new Wells Tech Wiki page with all the instructions that you need to use it. I even recorded a couple of 2-minute video tutorials to show you how to do it.
Oh, did you? I did not know that. Cool.
Fancy stuff.
Yeah, that's going to be a great resource. And why not take advantage of these free online tools to do that?
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. Share. Thanks for sharing.
Just a good mashup mm-hmm. there.
Yeah.
Okay. We'll jump into our Wells Tech Twitter conversation next. And we heard from Ryan Rosenthal. I thought this was a funny tweet. He said he just got a good reminder. What goes on the blog for parents at school is read by people other than the school parents. So imagine that. The internet is public. And so I think that's a good reminder for all of us. You know, you have to consider that anyone could be reading what you're putting out there. So keep that in mind as you're sprinkling your salt liberally out there on the internet.
Search engines are absolutely amazing. They will go into every crevice of every website and index it. So just be sure that you know what you're doing, and you know who your audience is. And if you want it private, then you need to take steps to make it private, because if it's on the internet, Google's finding it.
Absolutely.
Or Bing or whoever.
Yep. We also heard from another Twitterer, and this is St. Mark's Lutheran. I'm not sure the exact person that's behind this, but pretty active in the Twitter sphere is someone from St. Mark's Lutheran School. And they just recently posted a link to a page on their website, which also linked to a blog post about their Twittering. So Twittering for Christ is the ultimate blog post that they were linking to. It was done by a member of their congregation, just kind of pointing out the fact that you can use Twitter for evangelical purposes, for reaching out with the gospel message. And I think both posts are really well done, and you'd want to check it out. And you can also follow St. Mark's Lutheran on Twitter. They're at St. Mark's Lutheran, all run together as one word. So check that out.
And I believe that is St. Mark's Lutheran in South Dakota, Watertown.
Is that right?
Oh, I'm sorry, Watertown. Oh, it is Watertown, Wisconsin. My apologies. You're right.
Okay. All right. And finally on Twitter, I was tweeting this week. I found a really cool Twitter in 60 seconds video, especially for educators, if you're trying to explain Twitter to your teaching staff and why it might be a good education resource. In 60 seconds, this person does a really good job of just kind of a crash course on what Twitter is and how it can benefit you in terms of having a personal learning network that you can go to. So very well done.
And 60 seconds, kind of in the Twitter model of 140 characters or less. So
that's right. And finally, there was some discussion around the concept of event technology. A while back, Jimmy Holub had written on our Google sidebar, you know, asking for direction in terms of any groups that are doing more in the realm of video, lighting, computer presentations, electronic controls. And at that time, we had referenced our Wells Tech Wiki, because we do have some of the more technical aspects of that kind of documented out there on the wiki. Mm-hmm. We had a comment from Jeffrey Clark in response to that. He's an MLC student, and he said, this is actually something we were just talking about the other day in MLC AVCO. I'm guessing that's audio video something, mm-hmm. some kind of group that does audio video at MLC.
That's what they call their AV group, AVCO.
AVCO, there mm-hmm. you go. He said, I'd like to see a show, if not more talk on that subject. With digital mixers getting cheaper and easier to use, I see many churches going to event format instead of just a single altar mic and pair of wireless mics and amplifier with home type speakers. Boy, he just kind of described our sound system here at St. John's. Nailed that one there, uh-huh. Jeffrey. Anyway, Jimmy Hullab actually followed up and just commented on our website just recently, talking about all the different what he called live reinforcement technology that they're using in their church, mm-hmm. Allowing the musicians that are participating in the service to have feedback on what they're doing, having better lighting systems, control systems, all of that kind of stuff. So some great links and ideas there from Jimmy, and we'd love to hear from others who are doing this kind of thing in their congregation.
Yeah, he gave some names to concepts that I didn't know had names, which is good, because I'm learning the industry, like live video reinforcement, essentially the rebroadcast of the pastor's image, you know, let's say during the sermon on the video screen, so that more people can see it or focus on the presenter. So all kinds of good stuff in his email. So thanks for taking the time to do that. Really appreciate that, Jimmy.
Kind of reminded me of Synod Convention and the kind of things we do in some of those larger mm-hmm. venues. You need that kind of feedback for the audience so that they can stay connected with the speaker. So.
Yep, absolutely. Wrap up our community feedback?
That's all we have for this week. Hopefully we'll have more next week.
Yep, and ways to contact us, Sally?
Oh, we've got all kinds of ways to contact us. A great place to start is on our website at wellstech.wells.net. You can leave us a comment. You can send us an email. Our email address is wellstech@wells.net. Mm-hmm. You can send us a voicemail. You can tweet us at @WellsTech, or even visit our Facebook fan page at facebook.com/WellsTech. So,
and speaking of voicemail, we have a new voicemail number that you can use.
And that's right, Martin. I'm hoping you have that at your fingertips.
I do. we recently got a Google Voice account for the podcast. So we have our very own specialized number, and that number is 405-367-9357, or 405-4-WELLS. How about that?
F-O-R-W-E-L-S.
That's right, 405-4-WELLS. If you want to send us a voicemail, that'll come into our Google Voice account, and that'll just make you'll get all transcribed and everything, and you'll be able to get on the air. So that would be the number to call. The Skype number will still work. We just found that this would be a little bit easier, a little bit more memorable number, and making use of this free technology. So
reminds me that Google Voice got a nice letter from the FCC this week. Did you read that in the news?
Yeah, they weren't real happy, were they?
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how all that shakes out.
You can't determine who gets to use it and who doesn't. So, mm-hmm. All right.
Stuff.
Yep. So next week, we're going to continue, or actually conclude, our conversation on Clay Shirky's book, Here Comes Everybody. We're all the way up to Chapter 11, Promise, Tool, and Bargain is the name of the chapter. I'm excited about this chapter. It really talks about the concept of groups, and he calls it the paradox of groups. And essentially, the paradox is simple. You know, there can be no group without members, obviously, but there can also be no members without a group. So how do our churches and schools encourage these groups, and how to engage them in doing something productive and God-pleasing? So there's all kinds of tools that we talk about, and it kind of brings it all together. So we're talking about the promise of groups, tools, and then essentially the bargain of it all. So tune in next week. All right, and then once we finish with the Clay Shirky book, then we're going to actually look at another book that we would highly recommend, and we are going to talk through with you The Hidden Power of Electronic Culture, the subtitle How Media Shapes Faith, the Gospel, and Church, book by Shane Hipps. I was introduced to this book at a conference I attended out in Michigan last summer. Just an awesome read, and I think you'll enjoy our conversation around the hidden power of electronic culture. So that'll be the book we're following up Clay Shirky's book with. Sally, that'll about do it. We're going to close the show, as we always do, with the music of a Wells artist this week. It's Kevin Lersch, his song The Lord's Prayer, from his album Abide With Me. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. We will talk to you next week.
Temptation, but deliver us from evil.